It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, by now you've heard there's been a female shooter gone absolutely wild in Nashville, Tennessee, shooting up a number of people and kids. Seven are dead. This is at a private Christian school, and we're on top of it here at KMJ, and welcome to another week that's off to a horrible start. I mean, this shooting crap, it's just out of control. America is so sick. America is like mentally ill in more ways than one. I mean, I knew that this morning when I got out of bed and I heard that Elizabeth Warren was announcing re-election for a third term in the Senate. Yeah, I mean, but she's the type of person that's responsible for a lot of these, you know, really loose, you know, diluted laws that have eased up on these wannabe bad guys and girls and, you know, that bring harm to us all. I don't care what state you're living in. It's all over the country now. A private school getting shot up. You have to wonder, you know, about parents. What are they thinking when they send their kids to school now? You know, there's a couple of surveys out today, ironically, and they both use the word transition. You know, there are a number of parents in this country that are so fed up with public schools, they're secretly transitioning their children to private schools. You know, gone are the days when, you know, the happy parent is sending their kid off to school and trusting the public educators to prepare them for the successes as they grow up and become an adult. You know, the traditional things in life, reading, writing, mathematics, history, a fundamental appreciation of the United States and the Constitution. Pesky fundamentals, those things, reading, writing, and arithmetic. They're being submerged under a tsunami of cultural Marxism. So is it any wonder parents and children are moving their way into private schools? And speaking of transitioning, parents are absolutely fed up with the public schools who are secretly transitioning their children sexually, gender-wise. So, I mean, we've got a couple of stories today using the word transitioning for different reasons, and all have to do with public education. You got to love that. Now, what I've been saying, the closer that Ron DeSantis gets to announcing that he's running, and when he announces, things are going to change. Things are going to change. Well, we're getting close in a number of states, the early states, Iowa, New Hampshire, this, that, and the other. And look what's happening. Look what's happening. I mean, he's now neck and neck with the former president, Donald Trump, specifically in Iowa. Iowa. He's topping Trump 45 to 37. That's Ron DeSantis, 45 to 37%. He's dead even with Trump in New Hampshire now. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have a race. We have a race. And it amazes me how many of these Democratic politicians totally missed the threat right before our eyes of China and Russia. China and Russia. China and Russia want to take us out. China and Russia want to kill every single one of us. Yet, the very specially appointed climate envoy, John Kerry, a wonderful Vietnam veteran, don't get me started, especially this week, National Vietnam Day, to salute our Vietnam veterans coming up on the 29th. Yes, I'm going to remind you of it. Yes, I'm going to do something about it. But John Kerry says, we must work with China and Russia on climate change. This is our way to peace. Indeed. Thank you, sir. Do you really think Vladimir Putin is thinking about climate change with the USA right now? I don't think so. Financial news, kind of a side note here. Have you heard about the haircut that Elon Musk has taken? The Twitter market share, the value has plummeted. $20 billion in 6 months. $20 billion. Wow. Okay. Wow. In Phoenix, Arizona, there is a store called Family Dollar. There is an employee there named Kevin Madrid. He did something. He's 24 years old. He confronted a shoplifter, said, give me the stuff back. The shoplifter punched young Mr. Madrid in the face, bloodying his nose and other things, knocking his glasses off. Madrid responded by pulling his legal weapon and firing at him 10 times. And guess what happened? The employee who was assaulted by a thief stealing merchandise from the store where the individual was employed has been charged with second-degree murder. And the shoplifter is not dead. is not dead. CNN added again, bolstering their ratings, by saying the white people, they're accusing white people of digital blackface. What does that mean? The CNN writer John Blake is accusing white people of wearing digital blackface. I don't know. What's he talking about? We'll learn together a little bit later, you know. Lawmakers are advancing a bill to wipe TikTok off of everything in this country, a national ban. I don't know if it'll go anywhere. I don't know that the president would sign it, but I certainly would support it. I think it certainly has to be done. Absoluto, especially after that sterling testimony last week of the CEO of TikTok, Shouzi Chu, who dodged practically every single question that he was thrown, you know, by the representatives at the time. Yeah. I was just talking to Lisa Smitkamp. Makes a little national news. Newsom brings her up to Jon Stewart on his program, which is called The Problem with Jon Stewart. Stewart was interviewing him on San Quentin following the announcement of a massive overhaul of the site, and which is the home to California's death row. And somehow, some way, all of a sudden, here comes, you know, Lisa Smitkamp into the conversation. She didn't even know about it. She had to find out secondhand from somebody, you know. But that's great. I mean, as I said to her, what did I just say to her? I think I made an official pronouncement. Let's see. I have to clean up what I said. Oh, I can't find it. Anyway, it's kind of cute. I just said, are you officially, you know, a hero now because you've become our heroine, because you've officially become a giant pain in Gavin Newsom's, and I spelled something, bad word. The fight, Saturday night, Save Mart Center, Jose Ramirez, Richard Comey from Ghana. What a fight. I mean, I know many of you were there. There were thousands of you there. In fact, I thought it was a smaller crowd only because it was much quieter than the past. And I was talking to my dear friend Mitzi, who runs the Save Mart Center. Nope. Massive crowd, same numbers, huge, just much more polite and less drunk, I guess, because it was a little bit quieter, and that's fine. But the fight was just amazing. There were a number of fights on the card that were amazing. There was a female fight, WBA, WBC, middleweight belts, German girl, American girl, American girl wins, taking the belts from the German. Yes! There was a heavyweight fight that was really good. An American guy from L.A. versus a Samoan. I thought the Samoan killed him. But they gave the fight to the American. I mean, I'm like sitting in the fourth row from the ring, kind of up close and personal, you know? I'm not back, you know, with the binoculars going, maybe hit him, maybe he didn't. I thought that Samoan cleaned his clock for the most part. But no, judges saw it another way. But Jose, I've been curious to see if these prognostications from ESPN were true. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Well, I would say the first four or five rounds, it was no more Mr. Nice Guy. Then he settled into a groove because this guy Comey was relentless. Relentless. He was a good fighter. I mean, he's a former belt holder. I told you that it was going to be almost sort of even up. But in the 11th round, Comey goes down once. Goes down twice, goes down three times, and as Howard Cosell would used to say, forgive me, he's knocked him right onto Queer Street. Queer Street. Good old Howard Cosell. Had a completely different meaning back then. Everybody relax. He was knocked out, couldn't get up. Yeah, that was it. And I could tell that Jose was relieved to get that one over because the dude would not go down. He was relentless, but it was a good fight. I mean, it was a great fight. Jose was the fifth rated in his weight class going into the fight. I don't know where he is now. I want to check this out. I mean, he should be at least three or two. I don't think he would be elevated to one, you know, that fast, but this certainly has pushed his stock back up again. He certainly looks like he's got a bigger bite to him now. And I'm just wondering if we'll ever see him fight in Fresno again. You know, that could have been it. You know, eventually he's going to have to move on to some other markets like Vegas, that, you know, the markets that pay more. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But much to do today, and we'll keep an eye on this situation in Nashville. As soon as there's any kind of a news conference, believe me, you're going to hear it on KMJ. You're absolutely going to hear it. Again, last we hear, the 28-year-old girl, it was the shooter, 28-year-old female shooter this time. Seven people are dead, including children, at this private Christian school in Nashville, Tennessee. This is sad, very sad. They're all sad. This is KMJ, News Talk 580, 105.9, Ray Appleton. This is the week of our 100th anniversary documentary. I saw it 5 times this weekend in its entirety. It is brilliant. It is as entertaining as it is historic. Jeff Aiello has created a masterpiece. And I'm not saying this because I work here. You will agree when you see it. I'll be right back.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see, good for my career. Sent me to rehab, though, so. That's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
The Ray Appleton Podcast.
It's free.
KMJNow.com.
The documentary. We're going to have Jeff Aiello on this week. I think all of us are going to talk to him with our various shows. And the research that went into this, I don't know how he did it. You know, I think I know everything about everybody and everything, right? I'm in that business. I'm kidding, of course. But the things that he learned about this radio station that I was completely unaware of, remarkable. Remarkable. And the way that this thing looks, I mean, it just looks beautiful. It is, it's great. I could go on forever. It's great. So the 30th, which is Thursday, 7 o'clock, public TV, you're going to love it. 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 I know, but he's talking like a homie. Yeah, I'm talking like a homie, but it's that good. Anyway, if you have an appreciation for history, if you like to be entertained, if you have an appreciation for something that looks good and is well produced and well directed, this is for you. This is for you, and you're going to love it. TikTok may be out of here. The Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, announced yesterday that lawmakers are advancing legislation to propose a nationwide ban on TikTok. Mm-hmm. After the CEO testified before Congress last week. Now, after that testimony by the CEO and then Kevin saying what he said yesterday, I can only imagine that what he said, the CEO, didn't amount to a hill of beans, because now they want to dump the whole thing. Obviously, his, you know, dancing around every single question had a lot to do with this decision by McCarthy. Although I think, you know, going into it, they were sort of saying, this has got to go. But the House Energy Commerce and Committee officials called upon the TikTok CEO, Xu Zhiqu, to testify before the panel over the national security threats, data privacy, safety issues, you know, to the app's 150 million American users. It's Chinese spyware. And during the hearing, Xu neglected to answer practically everything. More specifically, whether individuals associated with ByteDance, which is the social media platform's Chinese parent company, helped him prepare for the hearing. And lawmakers further pressed Xu by asking if the app has spied on Americans at the request of Beijing. And that's something, of course, he denied. You remember, we've had one individual, well, a couple of individuals who are in intelligence in this country, saying that at the snap of a finger, you know, I want to quote this individual that said it, you know, Beijing can control the information on millions and millions of cell phones in this country. Yeah. Quote, it's very concerning that the CEO of TikTok can't be honest and admit what we already know to be true. China has access to TikTok user data. That's McCarthy in a tweet. The House will be moving forward with legislation to protect Americans from the technological tentacles of the Chinese Communist Party. You know, and it's the guy just did not answer any question specifically anyway. He more or less dodged everything. You know, McCarthy, easily you could say he's previously signaled that he would support a nationwide ban on TikTok, as both Republican and Democratic lawmakers have raised great concerns over the allegations that the Chinese Communist Party has access to user data through the links between ByteDance and TikTok, as well as to, you know, the extent to which, you know, authorizes China to maintain power and influence over both entities. And again, we stress Republicans and Democrats, this is a bipartisan deal. But I think because of Biden's affinity for President Xi and China, I don't think he would sign it. I don't think he will, even if it was a gigungous bipartisan bill and it came to him presented that way. Quoting again, I think you see in a bipartisan concern here with what's happening on TikTok, especially what's happening to the data for Americans. McCarthy again, of course. There are many different ramifications here. So I think they, you know, could come together and let the committees do their work and see what the product comes out, what it looks like when it's done. Of course, he's talking about the final bill. Now, Representative Mike Gallagher, Wisconsin, Republican, chairman of the House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party, is telling ABC News that, you know, yesterday that Chu's appearance in Congress actually increased the likelihood that Congress would take action. It's exactly what I said. I'm sure that had a lot to do with it. There was a Democrat representative from Illinois said that Chu's testimony to Congress failed to help TikTok's alleged threat to national security. This individual said TikTok did itself no favors on Thursday when the CEO gave its testimony. In fact, some of the answers he gave only raised more questions about the enormous existing security risks that we've been fighting to address for a long time. Some officials have called, you know, for a wholesale ban on TikTok, while others, you know, looking at TikTok, say the, you know, ask the Committees on Foreign Investment in the United States, a board that, how do I explain this? It evaluates the national security implications of international investments, I guess. They wanted to force a divestiture from ByteDance. Now, TikTok committed in one proposal called Project Texas to spend $1.5 billion protecting user data and ensuring that Chinese officials cannot access any user information. And everybody that's looked at this has rejected the proposal. Senator Mark Warner, Democrat, Virginia, telling CBS and Face the Nation yesterday that he believes the White House officials support the Restrict Act, a bill that he co-sponsored that would give the Commerce Department the authority to either ban TikTok or force its sale. I don't know if I go along with that or not. I think, you know, the White House is pretty lopsided in the way that they look at Beijing and President Xi. But the bill, which has, again, support, 11 Democrats and 11 Republicans, there it is, committees, would give the government authority to address possible threats, you know, posed by technologies affiliated with foreign governments. It's not only, you know, TikTok and China, but others. And that it would be by giving the Commerce Department the authority to review them or ban them in their entirety. I like it. Warner went on to say, I think the White House is very much in favor of this bill. We gave the Secretary of Commerce the tools for the ban to force the sale and other tools. I think the White House will go along with it. Well, I'm glad he's optimistic. You know, the White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby, busy guy, told media outlets in a separate interview that the Biden administration has already endorsed the emergence of security threats that risk information and communications technology. That's the Restrict Act. Can you believe that? It's kind of long and cumbersome. The Risk Information and Communications Technology Act. And he said that, you know, it would give President Biden additional tools and authorities to regulate TikTok. Hopefully he knows more than I do. So President Joe Biden said several state officials have banned TikTok from government devices over data security and surveillance concerns after reports indicated that ByteDance staffers at China use the platform to monitor the location of specific American users. And he said that, you know, the Committee on Foreign Investment Officials has been conducting ongoing reviews which examine the potential security risks. So this thing is being looked at from every angle, every possible conceivable angle. And again, this is a completely bipartisan, you know, it's a bipartisan get-together on this potential ban of TikTok. And, you know, hopefully Senator Warner is right, the Democrat from Virginia, that this will tell the President of the United States this is a must-do. We'll see. We'll know soon. We'll know soon.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now. It's free. KMJNow.com.
Well, Friday I goofed. I didn't actually goof. There was a mistake on this little printed thing that we get every day that tells us what contests we're doing and it gives us the Daily Buzz question. I indicated that last Friday was the last day of the contest for Billy Joel and Stevie Nicks. Oh, untrue, you lucky people. It's still going on. So, yeah, we want to send you to see that show, so just don't pay attention to what I said on Friday. You got to tune in between, well, not between, at 7:30, coming up at 12:30, and at 5:30, and we'll give you a very special national keyword to text and qualify to win. The grand prize, you and a guest, me, take me, we'll fly to Kansas City for two nights. Get premium tickets to the show, good seats, plus a famous, fabulous Kansas City barbecue dinner. Yeah, is that before or after? And then you'll see Billy Joel and Stevie Nicks. Kind of an odd combo, but it should work. I mean, a couple of big names. Should be good. So check it out at 12:30 today. Okay? Okay. Well, I've been saying, you know, as soon as a couple of states start their home polling for whatever it is they're going to be doing in the very near future to establish who the next presidential candidates are going to be, I said that you'll see DeSantis begin to move. And when he announces, you'll see him definitely move. Well, it's begun because of the activities in Iowa and New Hampshire. And despite some recent, you know, stumbles in national polling, he's had some. DeSantis is now neck and neck with Donald Trump in two key early states, illustrating his potential threat to the GOP frontrunner in the form of President of the United States. DeSantis is topping Donald Trump in Iowa, beating him 45-37, 45% to 37%. Yeah, he's got to be loving that. In New Hampshire, they're 39 points each, dead even, dead even. Now, DeSantis, his fortunes, I guess we could call them that, do take a little bit of a dip when more candidates are added to the mix. Spit it out. He ties Donald Trump in Iowa and lags behind Trump by 12 percentage points in the Granite State when other hopefuls such as Nikki Haley and Vivek Ramaswamy are considered. Yeah, I mean, they've got some juice behind them now, a little bit. Nevertheless, DeSantis enjoys some of the strongest favorability and unfavorable ratings of any GOP candidate. He's got both. You know, he's sitting at 81% to 11% in Iowa, 77% to 15% in New Hampshire. For comparison, Trump is clocking in at 74% to 24% in Iowa and 69% to 29% in New Hampshire. Now, the lead over DeSantis, Trump's lead, normally appears to have, you know, expanded in recent weeks, seemingly buoyed, I guess, by the specter of the indictment by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. By the way, what's going on with that? I'm telling you, that thing is fading away. And DeSantis, you know, the stoking backlash for the comments in which he described the war in Ukraine as a territorial dispute. That really knocked him for a loop, Ron DeSantis. Trump has a 15-1 percentage point edge over DeSantis per the latest Real Clear Politics, you know, aggregate poll. But looking at, you know, that those polls where early action will happen, New Hampshire and Iowa, DeSantis is doing very well, very well. You know, but no other hypothetical contender has cracked double digits. Yet there are some, I have to say this, there are some warning signs for Ron DeSantis in the early polling, with some voters very uneasy about the odds of him beating President Joe Biden in a general election matchup. Only 48% of the New Hampshire voters and 54% of the Iowa voters saw him as the strongest candidate against Biden, compared to 46% of the New Hampshire voters and 44% of the Iowa voters who picked Biden. Ugh. Earlier this month, DeSantis was in Iowa, and he has plans to travel to New Hampshire next month. And he's, you know, he's testing the political waters a little bit earlier in the primary states. Other candidates, such as Haley and Ramaswamy, they have already frequented those states. And DeSantis, you know, he has yet to declare, you know that, but he's anticipated to do so sometime after the Florida state legislature wraps up its business in May. Everybody thought April. Now insiders are saying, nah, it's going to be May before he says anything. He's also embarked on a media blitz. This is to promote his new book, The Courage to Be Free, Florida's Blueprint for American Survival. Nice. I like the title. I just hope he can back it up. So the margin of error, you know, in these sample sizes were unavailable. And I really wouldn't worry about them, you know, because there's still plenty of time between now and then. All right, pretty soon we're going to have a Nashville police update on the shooting. And when that happens, we will lay it on you. I tell you what, why don't we go to a break now, just in case we can meet that on the other side. I'm hearing mixed reports. 6 are dead, 7 are dead. We know that, you know, adults and children have been killed by this 28-year-old female shooter at a Nashville, Tennessee private Christian elementary school. This is bad, very bad. Oh, we've also got Joe Biden. Why don't we go to Biden for a little bit now? All right, let's listen to the president.
Chocolate chip. I came down because I heard there was chocolate chip ice cream.
Jeez.
By the way, I have a whole refrigerator full upstairs.
Oh, this guy.
I think I'm kidding. I'm not. God. Ben, how are you, pal?
The master of
One
bad
of the best
timing,
guys
isn't
in the
he?
United States Congress, Ben Cardin. Folks, welcome to the White House. It's a delight to have you all here. And who are those good-looking kids back there? They're your kids, all four of them? Well, stand up, guys.
You know, this guy is in another planet.
John, we'll jump back in here.
Yeah, let's go to the break, Michael. He doesn't know what he's doing, so we'll be right back. This is KMJ.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Right now,
Elk Valley's legendary Ray Appleton.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, KMJNow.com.
All right, I repeat, very soon, the Nashville police will update on the shooting. 28-year-old female shooter, 6 or 7 dead. They were saying 7 for a while, but it looks like everybody's sliding back to 3 and 3, 3 children, 3 adults. The president is speaking on this. But it got off to such a bizarre start. It's interesting that networks were carrying it, and now they've all checked out of it. So I guess it's just like, okay, this is too much. We can't handle this. You know, he starts talking about, you know, chocolate chip ice cream and things like that. And Anyway, we've got this update now, it looks like. Yeah, let's go for it, Michael. Bring it up.
This is the second briefing. There will be other briefings to be held here in the same spot later this afternoon. We'll continue to brief throughout the rest of the day. Chief Drake.
First and foremost, I want to say thank you all for being here on this very unfortunate situation. My heart and prayers go out to the families of the six people who were tragically injured. What I know at this point is at 10:13 today, our officers responded to a shots fired call to Covenant School. It's a church school. Officers immediately responded. A team of five immediately went in the school, went to where gunshots were being heard, and engaged the suspect. We have identified the suspect right now, tentatively a 28-year-old female white. We know the address of that person as well, and so we have some ongoing investigations as to that. We have three adult victims, and we have three children who have been identified, and their families have been contacted. Right now, I will refrain from saying the ages, other than to say I was literally moved to tears to see this and the kids as they were being ushered out of the building. I want to say thanks to all of our partners, to the FBI, to the ATF, and other federal partners, to the THP, Tennessee Highway Patrol, the TBI, the district attorney, and to the fire department, who all came together and seamlessly addressed this situation as quickly as possible. I've already gotten a request from the national media about a great response. We're still assessing that as well. But what I can say and what I've said before is that whenever I hope that we would never have this situation, that if we ever did, we would not wait. We would immediately go in and we would immediately engage the person perpetrating this horrible crime. And so that's all I can say. Right now we have David Rouse, director of the TBI, who will come after me to address his portion. And then we have others that will say something as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Again, I want to echo what Chief has said in reference to the great support and the great teamwork that has been taking place here, and as well as sending our heartfelt prayers to the families, to this community of these victims. Now, I know there'll be people who want to criticize us for prayers, but that's the way we do that in the South, right? We believe in prayer, and we believe in the power of prayer. And so our prayers go out to these families. The role of the TBI in this investigation is we have been asked by General Funk to assist in the officer-involved portion of this incident. So the incident where the officers engaged the suspect, we are assisting the Metro investigation. And the reason we've got Metro doing the primary investigation is because it was a fluid scene. So there wasn't a single stop in the action. So as they investigate the homicides, then we felt it was most appropriate for them to continue that investigation. But we will assist as in our role as an independent oversight on the officer-involved situation. And so that will be the role of TBI. We too want to thank all of our partners. It is special. We've had this conversation, unfortunately, too many times in Tennessee, and that is that you wish you wouldn't have to do these types of scenes. But when you do, you want to have the working relationships that we have in our law enforcement community here in Tennessee. It is amazing. And we've all come together as one and working very tirelessly, and we'll continue to work together to address this situation. It's a horrible, senseless tragedy, and we will be here working with our partners to get through it. And next, I'd like to introduce the District Attorney General, for this area going forward. This is the ultimate crime when school children and caregivers are the victims of senseless gun violence. Can't say anything before we first express our concerns for the victims and their families and the extended number of victims that are traumatized by today's events. I came out on the scene today because our current operating procedure is that when an officer is involved in a shooting, that the TBI comes out, and I knew that this was a unique case, and I wanted to make sure that everything was handled appropriately. Director Roush was out here almost at the exact same time I got here, and Chief Drake had already been on the scene for a while. The three of us met and talked about how the investigation was going to be handled. We made a joint decision affirming what the two law enforcement leaders, how they wanted to proceed, which was that Metro was going to handle the bulk of this, but the TBI would participate in a capacity to continue with making sure that we have transparency and everything, and to make sure that any backup that MNPD needs in this continued investigation would be provided. Can't not stress enough how seamlessly that worked to have a conversation, a decision to be made quickly and appropriately as far as how the case was going to be handled from here. Hats off to Chief Drake and to Director Roush. Also want to thank Chief Swan and our federal partners as well. While I cannot comment about the ongoing nature of the investigation, I'm really impressed with the work that's being done by law enforcement.
Yes, good afternoon. First, let me just say, as everyone else, what a tragic day here in Nashville. So our hearts and our prayers do go out to all the family members and also the first responders that actually made this call. As always, the fire department and all.
And this is a live update from Nashville police on the school shooting.
And we were here.
We'll stay with us a little bit longer on KMJ and see if we can learn anything new. It's important stuff. Breaking news.
Again, as we said earlier,
this is KMJ.
We asked for that. And the ongoing support that's needed from our standpoint is to give support in any area that's asked for on the scene. So again, we thank you, and from this point forward, we'll just continue on with our mission and try to bring some type of closure and resolution. Thank you.
I anticipate there will be another briefing at or before 4 o'clock. We will entertain two or three questions at this moment before these gentlemen have to go back to the scene to continue their work.
Chief, did you identify the shooter in this case yet?
Yes, we have identified the suspect. It's a 28-year-old female white, actually a Nashvillian, or lives in the Nashville area. We are having an ongoing investigation as it pertains to her at this
located
time.
Located her place of where she lived, and you have officers there?
We have.
Was she wearing body armor?
Was she wearing body armor? I can't say that far into the investigation. I don't remember seeing it, but I can't say for certain if she had body armor on or not.
Did she have any connection to the church?
From my initial findings is that at one point she was a student at that school, but unsure what year, all of that. But that's what I've been told so far.
Did she give any word on social media, or has her social media been examined at this point?
The investigations are still going at this point. Our federal partners, our state partners, we're all looking into that to see exactly. This is still fluid at the time, but we're looking at everything.
Did anybody pull the fire alarm? Do we know?
Don't remember a fire alarm going out. I was told there were kids that evacuated into a wood line. They had the presence of mind to do that and to go to a fire hall. Once we arrived on scene, we had everyone move to First Baptist Church, Woodmont, and that way we could get parents and...
We're going to bust out at KMJ. Anything else happens in the way of a live development, we'll bring it to you. Stay with us.
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.